You're listening to a Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders 30th Anniversary Podcast. Founded in 1978, GLAAD is New England's leading legal rights organization dedicated to ending discrimination based on sexual orientation, HIV status, and gender identity and expression. For more information and updates on GLAAD's current legal work, visit us at glaad.org.
By 2001, thanks to new treatments and therapies, HIV was no longer a death sentence. People were living with HIV, and as people with HIV lived longer, they began to face life-threatening diseases other than HIV. GLAAD that year represented two people whose HIV was well under control, but who had only months to live because of end-stage liver disease. Their only chance at life was a liver transplant. But private insurers and Medicaid refused to pay, claiming that liver transplants were experimental in people with HIV. In two of the first cases of their kind, GLAAD challenged these decisions and won, giving people with HIV a fair shot at the medical procedures they need to live. GLAAD AIDS Law Project Director Ben Klein.
I remember in 2001, I got a call one day in July from somebody at AIDS Action Committee, and they told me that Belinda Dunn had end-stage liver disease and that she was going to die without a liver transplant, and that her insurer was denying coverage for the transplant on the basis that liver transplantation of people with HIV was experimental, and that we needed to get into court right away to get an order to save Belinda's life. That was the first we ever heard of this issue. It was not on the radar of GLAAD or of any other legal organization in the country, and so we were starting from complete scratch about how to build the legal theories, how to provide the medical evidence that liver transplantation was not experimental in people with HIV. And I can remember very clearly talking to Belinda's doctor and asking her, do we really need to get into court next week? And she said yes.
Belinda Dunn was a Boston AIDS activist who had been living with HIV since 1991 and hepatitis C since the 1970s. She was president of the National Association of People with AIDS and the founder of and driving force behind the Who Touched Me ministry at AIDS Action Committee, a program focused on getting local Black churches involved in HIV and AIDS prevention and providing support for people living with HIV. Hope Brown, Belinda's daughter, volunteers as an advocate for people with HIV where she lives in Florida. She remembers her mother as a fighter.
She never gave up. I don't care what you're going through, whether it's an illness or anything in life, she just never gave up. She believed in God. She loved her family. She loved her coworkers. And she was a genuine, real person, and she never gave up.
Larry Kessler, the former executive director of AIDS Action, says Belinda was a force.
Well, that kind of determination, I think, is contagious, and it impressed people enough that they knew she was not only advocating for herself, she was advocating for everybody, Black and white, male, female, gay, straight, Latino. And she had friends in all the various communities that were beginning to acknowledge that they were being impacted. And so, in a sense, she was that sort of one part prophet, one part healer, one part teacher, one part, you know, activist, but always advocate, always advocating for better treatment, access to care, access to information, prevention strategies.
Kessler also describes Belinda as Boston's Tina Turner, as much for her fighting spirit as for her fierce sense of fashion. She loved wigs, he says, and shoes.
She was the Imelda Marcus of the AIDS activist. She loved shoes, and she would come to work, sometimes wear two different wigs on one day. The hair sometimes represented a mood that she was going to be in, and it was either going to be very flashy or very determined or very businesslike. It was impossible to be around her and not pick up on that positive energy.
In 2001, Belinda's spirit was still strong, but her hepatitis C had made her body weaker. At 49, she used a walker to help her get around. Her legs had swollen to twice their normal size. Her doctor said her liver would fail without a transplant, and she could die within months. But Belinda's health insurance company, Neighborhood Health Plan, wouldn't cover the transplant. Belinda twice appealed the HMO's decision, They denied her appeals, arguing that the combination of her diseases, HIV and hepatitis C, meant that a liver transplant would be, quote, experimental, and experimental procedures weren't covered under her health plan. Belinda called GLAD.
One called at GLAD, and things started to move real quick. They were the best group in town who understood that if you don't snuff out discrimination or stigma when it arises, it multiplies and it gets worse and reproduces itself. I don't remember if Belinda said to me or to others, but I think it was just unanimous right away. Well, let's get GLAD involved.
GLAD filed for an emergency injunction in federal court to force the HMO to pay for Belinda's transplant. At issue was whether the drugs used in a transplant to suppress the body's immune reaction to the surgery could also allow her HIV to replicate.
In the past, liver transplants were not done in people with HIV, and the reasons were that people with HIV did not live long lives, and so it was not a good allocation of scarce resources. But the more important reason was that the anti-rejection drugs that people are given after an organ transplant suppress the immune system. So if you give those drugs to somebody with HIV, their HIV will replicate out of control and they will quickly die of HIV.
But triple combination therapy had made it possible to control HIV after a procedure like liver transplantation. GLAD found cases that showed doctors could administer anti-rejection drugs while simultaneously controlling HIV so that outcomes for people with HIV were similar to the outcomes for people without HIV.
But the insurers kept bandying about this word experimental. And that became the central dispute in the case. What does experimental mean? The insurers were using experimental as a medical term when in fact it's a legal term. It's a term of insurance coverage. And we were able to present cases and develop the legal theory to demonstrate that even if something was new or novel or had only been done in a small number of patients, that it was not necessarily experimental. As long as you could show that there was sufficient evidence in the cases that had been done that the medical procedure here, liver transplantation, was safe and effective in people with HIV.
GLAD scoured the country for doctors who had done liver transplants for people with HIV and found about 24 cases. There wasn't any published medical literature, so Klein looked at unpublished manuscripts to piece together a picture showing that liver transplants that had been performed in people with HIV were effective. In fact, the success rate for the procedure was around 70%, similar to success rates in people without HIV. GLAD argued that despite the small number of cases and the fact that most transplant centers at that time would not transplant a person with HIV, the procedure was not experimental. Klein says putting the case together was a race against the clock.
In Belinda's case, we pulled together all of our law and medical evidence in about 4 days and filed a case in federal court seeking an injunction against the insurer from denying Belinda a liver transplant. While that case was pending and before the court had ruled, there had been a tremendous amount of publicity, and this became a huge issue in the city of Boston. And at that time, different people started to get involved, most notably Mayor Menino. And Mayor Menino pulled together a number of sources and essentially negotiated a settlement by which a neighborhood health plan, Belinda's insurer, would pay for the liver transplant with contributions for that care coming from some significant charitable sources in the city of Boston.
The mayor created the Life Fund, which would pay for Belinda's transplant. Any money left over would go to help others in her situation. The fund's first contributions included a $100,000 donation from Neighborhood Health Plan and $50,000 from its parent company, Harvard Pilgrim Health Plan. According to Larry Kessler, the fund was a testament to Belinda's reputation in the community. Though she and the mayor weren't close friends, she had made an impression.
Basically, it was one of those situations where Tom and Nino had fallen in love with her, too. You know, he had seen her. He had been on panels with her. He had seen her at various churches. He had seen her around AIDS Action. He saw her at the State House speaking on Lobby Day. And so he understood that this woman was a key player and an inspiration to so many people. So when he found out that she was having problems with the insurance company, he just said, well, we'll find the money somewhere else. We'll just do it. The other thing I think that his support did was it galvanized the rest of the community. And by saying, well, if neighborhood health plan won't support her, I will, and we'll find others who will join me. And of course, finally, the health plan at that point said, "Jesus, we gotta move here because now we've got the mayor against us as well."
Belinda's fight made the public aware of the need for legal intervention in these cases, and the mayor's fund would make her transplant possible. But GLAAD still didn't have a clear victory people with HIV could rely on as a legal precedent. But it wasn't long before they would have another chance.
About 2 weeks after Belinda's case was settled, I got another call from AIDS Action Committee. And it was that they had a client who was not on private health insurance but was on Medicaid with the identical case. And in that case, we had a little bit more time to actually prepare and build our evidence and develop our legal theories so that we could create a much stronger case to create a precedent.
In Doe v. Managed Care Organization, GLAAD in November 2001 represented the 41-year-old man at the Division of Medical Assistance, the state board responsible for Medicaid cases. Ironically, the state had contracted with Neighborhood Health Plan for the patient's medical coverage. As in Belinda's case, the HMO had denied coverage of a transplant and denied his appeals. But in this case, the outcome was different, and it was decisive. The board concluded that the patient's transplant was medically necessary and that GLAAD had shown sufficient evidence that transplantation was an effective cure for hepatitis C in patients co-infected with HIV. These cases gave Belinda and GLAAD's Medicaid client a second chance at life. But as Klein points out, leveling the field doesn't guarantee success.
One of the things that I think was compelling about these cases and important for the public to understand was that just because you get funding doesn't mean you're going to get a liver transplant. There are about 16,000 people a year on a waiting list in this country, and a good number of them die waiting for a liver transplant. So in effect, what we were asking for people with HIV was simply to be given the same shot as anybody else with end-stage liver disease. There was no guarantee that Belinda or the client in our Medicaid case were actually going to live long enough such that they would rise to the point in the waiting list where they would get a transplant.
GLAAD's client in the Medicaid case died waiting for his transplant. Belinda was luckier. On March 5, 2002, she had her first liver transplant at the University of Pittsburgh Hospital. By that time, she had been waiting and fighting for more than 8 months. The cost for the transplant was more than the Life Fund could cover. But because of GLAAD's Medicaid case, her HMO reversed its ruling and agreed to pay for all costs above the amount Mayor Menino had raised. But Belinda's body rejected the new liver. She moved to the top of the transplant list, and remarkably, a second liver became available days later. She had a second transplant, but there were complications. Belinda died on March 13, 2002, from respiratory distress, complications from her surgery unrelated to her HIV infection. Since 2001, these two cases have saved lives. They changed the legal and medical landscape for people co-infected with HIV and hepatitis C who need transplants to live. In Massachusetts, private insurers and Medicaid have covered organ transplants for people with HIV. And according to Larry Kessler, it's rare to hear of insurers anywhere in the country who won't cover these necessary procedures. A woman like Belinda Dunn is destined to leave a legacy. In many ways, it was her tenacity and spirit that has given people who need life-saving transplants a fighting chance. For Larry Kessler, her legacy was about breaking down barriers and building community.
She sort of tore down that wall, so to speak, that was separating the various communities who were at risk and saying, hey, it's ours too. And we have to confront it and we have to deal with it and get over it, you know. And fight the stigma and fight the discrimination. We've already had a couple centuries of fighting discrimination, but this was a new one that was now threatening to cause additional harm, you know, to the community in terms of self-esteem, in terms of health, and their future.
Hope Brown isn't surprised that her mom left a mark.
It's hard to forget Belinda. I don't care who you are, if you've ever met her, if you've ever talked to her, if you've ever just been in the same room with her. It's just so hard to forget her. So it's just wonderful that in so many positive ways that her presence is still there. I will never forget her, and it just makes me feel like $1 million that the rest of the world knows her too.
Thanks for listening to this GLAAD podcast. This is the final episode in our 30th anniversary series. For more information on this case and to listen to our other podcasts, visit our website at glaad.org.